The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It's a Wednesday. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com on the Progressive Voices Network, on YouTube and Twitter, I believe, and usually Twitch, although it doesn't appear to be working today, but that doesn't mean it isn't. You never know. Or I should say, I never know. And we're not streaming to Facebook these days because for the last month or so, the stream has been really choppy and I don't know what's up. So I do post the YouTube link on Facebook, so hopefully people can watch from there. If you have trouble finding the show when it's live, email me, Nicole at NicoleSandler.com, and I'll try to help you. By the same token, if you regularly listen in some way, like perhaps you're one of the people who was listening on the YouTube and on the Facebook, and now you don't. Let me know if you ever have difficulties. You know, as one of my intros tells you, I am a one woman band here, so I'm trying to figure it all out. And the tech stuff is not my strongest point, but you know, I generally can slog my way through. Anyway, welcome to a Wednesday. YouTube on the TV, okay. That's too big. I would hate to see my face blown up that large. Anyway, today we do have a guest coming up, and he is the executive director of an organization called In the Public Interest, and they do good work over there. They're based in California. Anyway, his name is Donald Cohen, and he wrote a book called The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America, and how we can fight back. And it's the last part that I'm really interested in. How do we fight back? Because everything is being privatized. I got to tell you, I was on, I don't know, one of the sites. It was either Facebook or it was that Nextdoor thing that, you know, I get like alerts from my neighborhood. And I saw somebody posted in there about, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but it was to the effect of, I am now on Medicare. I used to get this medication. It cost me $5 a month. But now I'm on Medicare and they want $175 to fill this prescription for the first time. And then after that, it's going to be like $130 each month. It's like, I can't afford that. What the hell? And there were many, many, many responses on it. But to the last one, they all said something about, well, you're in the wrong Medicare Advantage plan. And if you go to this Medicare Advantage plan and check with your Medicare Advantage, because every single person was saying something about a Medicare Advantage plan. Well, I actually understand the reasons why people are saying Medicare Advantage. One is they believe that that is simply the name of what Medicare is now, because that's all you hear about. And if you're old, hello, and you watch cable news, those are the commercials you see, especially between, you know, the middle of November and the end of December. The ads for Medicare open enrollment season. And it used to be they were pushing the different supplemental plans available because, frankly, that's the fucked up thing about Medicare, is that although it's a great program, when they put it into effect, they said, you know, we got to give these old people some of the pain, so make them pay something. It wasn't the 20% that we are responsible for of Medicare was not put in because, you know, the government couldn't afford to pay the full freight. It was to give us a share in the pain, maybe so that we wouldn't frivolously go to the doctor, God forbid. So that's the reason. They built it in, just saying, well, we can't give it to everybody for free. Here's a hint. Yes, you could. They could. Just like we can afford whatever we need. We can afford free college tuition at state colleges and community colleges. We can afford to take care of the people in this country who need help. We can afford it. And the wealthiest among us keep getting richer and richer, but that's a thing for another day. This is the slow motion privatization of Medicare. What they are working towards is phasing out straight Medicare, traditional Medicare. And what they should do is say, in traditional Medicare, screw that 20%. And by the way, this Part D stuff is bullshit. That's the drug plan. It should all be included. I mean, now, for the longest time, I was saying, hurry up, 65. I can't wait to get to 65 so I can get on Medicare. Now I'm saying, wait a minute. I have a drug that I use every month. It's a patch. And it's a patch that they prescribe to Parkinson's patients. I don't have Parkinson's disease, but I do have restless leg syndrome. I have got it really, really bad. So this patch, it's called Nupro. I think the new cost of it this year is somewhere in the neighborhood of $700 a month, which I can't afford to pay. So with my insurance, it gets knocked down to, $175 a month, which I can't afford to pay. So the manufacturer of this particular medication does have a program where they help you with it. So I've been part of this for the last like 4 years or something. And the way it works is they put in my code and my copay is $10 a month, but it won't work with Medicare. So what's happening is older people who are, you, when you're 65, you're put on Medicare, which is, should be a good thing. It always was a good thing until this privatization push is turning everything to this Medicare Advantage, which should be called Medicare Disadvantage, because it gives the insurer the right to go between you and your doctor. Traditional Medicare, if your doctor says you need this procedure, you need this, I don't want to say drug because drugs are not included. You need this procedure. It goes through. There's no pre-authorization. There's no refusal of services. If the doctor says you need it, you need it. When you're on a Medicare Advantage plan, the insurance company can say, nope, we're not going to pay for that. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff in there. This is just one of the privatization scams that I believe is destroying the country. So we'll talk with Donald Cohen later in the hour about his book, The Privatization of Everything. And it's not only everything. Oh, so old Sage Joe in the chat room said, I didn't sign up for Part D. It seemed like a GOP scam. Joe, I'm curious. Joe, would you want to call in? If you do, I would love to talk to you. The number is 954-889-6410. And I'll take your call right away. Because what I want to know is, are you on straight traditional Medicare, or are you on a Medicare Advantage plan? If you're on an Advantage plan, you don't need Part D, because these Advantage plans include prescription drugs. It seems like you're getting the bargain of a lifetime until you get sick, until you need their services, and then they could say, nah, we're not going to cover that. We're not going to cover that. Yeah. So Part D, well, it's not a scam. If you don't have Medicare Advantage, if you have traditional Medicare, you need Part D in order to get your medications covered. But it's expensive. See, and that's the dilemma. That's what they do. They rope you in so that, again, I really, David is on Medicare. I'm not old enough yet. But, you know, we did all the research when he turned 65. And I did not want him to be on Medicare Advantage because I've heard all the horror stories from everybody, right? I've Wendell Potter, who's been a guest on this show dozens of times over the past decade or more. So I knew that's not the way to go because it's a money saving thing. It's a money making proposition for them. But you're not informed about this. And again, the general consensus on this social media site that I was on last night is everybody thinks Medicare is Medicare Advantage. And it's a disadvantage for me because we can't afford to go the traditional Medicare route. Anyway, we'll go into all that and a whole lot more, like the privatization of roads, public works. But before we get to that, I mean, the big, Diane Russell says, so far my Medicare Advantage plan hasn't denied me any procedures. That's good. You haven't had anything, I'm guessing, very serious, because they will. David fought for probably a year for these orthotics that he has to put in his shoes. He had a car accident when he was just, you know, still in college. He was a passenger in a car. They were driving from Phoenix to Las Vegas. His friend was driving, and David fell asleep in the passenger seat, woke up after he was pulled out of a burning car that had flipped on a dark street on the way to Vegas, and some passerby happened to see the car that went off the road and caught on fire and pulled David out. The driver was killed. David never did find out the name of the person who saved his life, but he lost, you know, a lot of toes on one of his feet and it burned very badly. And so, you know, his feet are fucked up. And so he wears these orthotics. Well, AvMed, who's the company that has his Medicare Advantage plan, said, oh, we don't cover your orthotics, which is bullshit. They should be covered. And he's been fighting and going back and forth with them. And he finally won in the end. But this is a thing. They will do that. On Medicare, straight traditional Medicare, they wouldn't do that. All right. We got a caller on the line from the 530 area code. Is this Joe?
Yes, it is.
Hey, hi.
Nicole, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thank you so much for calling. Old Sage Joe is a regular in the YouTube chat room. So you said you didn't get Part D, but do you have traditional Medicare?
Yeah, I'm on traditional Medicare and just had surgery this morning on traditional Medicare.
Wow. And outpatient surgery, I'm guessing, because you're on the phone with me?
Yeah, outpatient, so I'm home now.
Okay, so everything's okay? That's the most important thing. But so if you have any, did they give you antibiotics or pain pills or anything to take after the surgery?
They prescribed some pain pills, and the lady gave me a ride. You have to have someone drive you back and forth to hospital. She's right. Gone in to get to pick up my scripts for me, but no antibiotics.
Okay, so but they gave you pills, but then so how do you pay for them? You've got to pay full freight on them, don't you?
I do, and it was a couple of years ago, I guess. I had a surgery, and they prescribed two antibiotics, and one of those antibiotics was apparently expensive, and the other one was relatively inexpensive, only $15 or $20.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got the one that was inexpensive, and that seemed to be enough.
Wow. Well,
the antibiotics are mainly prophylactic, just to prevent infection.
Sure.
So.
Right. So you still got one, but so it sounds like you're lucky that you don't have any underlying conditions that you need regular ongoing medication for, because that's where Part D comes in. That is what pays for prescription drugs in Medicare. So if you don't have Part D, you don't have any prescription drug coverage, right?
Right. But you get a discounted price at the pharmacies, apparently.
Right. Well, now they have all those like GoodRx and other programs like that, where oftentimes you can get the prescription cheaper without using your insurance. You bypass the insurance, or if you're uninsured. I'm knocking on wood laminate here that you're fine, you're healthy. But if you needed like chemotherapy drugs or something like that, you'd be in big trouble.
Probably. but I'm not so certain I would accept those drugs. I have an attitude about prescription drugs. And the Republicans just made it worse because I'm under the impression that you can sign up for one of these multiple plans and pick one that covers the particular drug you're taking, and then they'll discontinue paying for that drug, and then you're stuck with a plan that doesn't pay for the drug. And
well,
caught up in that web, I just
Medicare Advantage, though. It's Medicare Advantage plans can do that because they are private insurance companies who, you know, can put whatever restrictions they want on you. And yes, they can deny you services and they can say, we don't cover that medication. Or, as you suggest, you know, cover it for a while and say, we're not covering that anymore. But from what I understand, traditional Medicare, they can't do that. But when it comes to the prescription drug things, I have no idea. I have no idea how it works there. I think this is part of it. They know older people are sometimes easily confused, and they make it as confusing as possible. Really? So we don't know what we're doing, right?
Maybe. I mean, I'm under the impression that just regular Part D and on regular Medicare, I could suffer the same consequences.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think so. And on, you know, don't take my word for it, though. I don't know for sure. I get your, you know, your big pharma skepticism, but as somebody who, look, I take four drugs on an ongoing basis. I've been honest. I take Prozac for depression, which I believe is credited for keeping me sane these days. I take a thyroid pill because I've got thyroid disease. And I have those patches for my restless leg syndrome and another medication to supplement the restless leg medication. So those are four medications that I get filled every month that, you know, without insurance, I certainly couldn't afford it. I mean, the patches alone are over $700 a month. So I need coverage. I have a distaste for big pharma. I don't think that medicine should be a for-profit enterprise. Right? So,
no, it shouldn't. They need to do something about it. I'm not real confident anything will get done.
Yep. Killer Queen just said, I have Part D, just had to get antibiotics, $4, and it's the first of the year, so no complaints. So, yeah, I don't know. Joe, I hope you stay healthy. That's all I can say. I hope you stay healthy and you don't need the medication. All right. I'm going to run because I got other people. Yeah? You say what?
That was part of my plan is just, you know, because I've been on Medicare for 10 years now and not paying premiums. If I wanted to sign up for Part D, I guess there's a formula where I would pay a lot more signing
right.
up late.
Yep. Yep.
Hello.
What? Hold on one second. Hold on one second. All right. So I'm bringing in another caller. Somebody's calling from the 574 area code. Who's this?
This is Tim, and I'm calling from Shopton, Indiana.
Hey, Tim. Tim from Indiana. Nicole. Hi. Say hi to Joe.
Hey, Joe. How are you, sir? I just wanted I'm doing good. I apologize for cutting you off there.
That's all right. So, Tim, what's going on with you?
Well, I just thought I'd say, you know, I'm on disability, but I'll be turning 65 in a month or less than a month. And I have to admit, I'm on the Medicare Advantage plan, and I would prefer not to be, mm-hmm. but I have four medications that I get, and since they break them down to tier one to tier five.
Right.
And my medications are in tier one and tier two, and since I need them all the time, if you get them 3 months at a time, they send it to you via the mail, and it's free.
Wow.
If you buy it monthly, then you have to pay for those medications. So obviously that helps.
This is on disability though, Tim, right? So this is pre-Medicare. This is on disability. So it's through SSDI, or do you have a separate insurance policy?
It's technically considered Medicare.
Oh, right. Okay. Cause disability is through Medicare.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I found out that, you know, when I reach, 67, I believe, then I lose the disability, but it's just the same thing. It's the same
Medicare.
Amount, and it's just Medicare, period.
Got it.
But here's the problem. And this is the thing that's a concern, because I talked to an insurance salesman that bought my dad's business, and I trust him implicitly. And like he said, the regular Medicare, when you buy the Part G, which pays that 20%,
uh-huh,
then you have to buy the prescription drug.
Right, which is Part D.
That's separate.
Right.
And then if you want vision, that's separate.
Yep.
And then if you want dental, that's separate.
Yeah.
So when you add it all up, first of all, just before you even add it up, regular Part G, I think it is approximately about $200.
Yeah, it depends on your income and depends on your situation, but it is about that. Yeah, it's about $200. And they're offering Medicare Advantage plans for zero. So, I mean, people
exactly.
are going to do what's the most, and that's why David's on Medicare Advantage. And frankly, you know, if I turn 65 tomorrow, that's what I would do as well, because it's what we can afford right now.
Exactly. And that's where I'm just, you know, I've been heartbroken the last several months because I've been going back and forth and back yep. and forth. But as the insurance salesman told me, he said to go, if I knew I was going to have knee surgery tomorrow, he said, I should do what he did, and that is you get the Part G and you stay with just Medicare. You have the surgery done, but then after that's all said and done, you then switch to the Medicare Advantage, because you're going to save a lot of money in the long run. That is if you don't get with a major illness that they have limitations
right.
on. But which ones are that, you don't really know until
right.
it happens.
Exactly. It's the catch-22.
It's like I'm going to Vegas.
Yeah.
It's like I'm going to Vegas.
It's a crapshoot. You're right.
And I'm betting I'm going to get sick. That's the other thing that still goes through my mind and causes me to hesitate and not do anything but stick with the Medicare Advantage.
Right.
Even though I look at like William McGuire and how much money he made. And then when he was making what, $110 million, I think it was, a year or more. And then when he retired at only, what, 10, 15 years, he got $1.6 billion, I think it was, something like that, or $1.5 billion with a B in stock options and the like.
Uh-huh.
And that was William McGuire from United Healthcare.
Oh, of course. Well, they're the ones. They're cleaning up. Exactly. It is. Look, I've said it many times. Health insurance, the health insurance industry, it's government-sanctioned extortion. Because you have to pay it. If you don't pay it, you go broke or die. You know, if you pay it, then, you know, then you can get cared for depending on the limits of your plan. And they can do with you what they like, especially if you're in a Medicare Advantage plan. It's just, it is a catch-22, and it's bad, and it needs to be fixed. Tim and Joe, if you're still there, thank you. I'm going to keep going, because there are other people who want to get in. So thank you both for calling. I hate that this is happening. All right. I think this is Joy's husband, Tom. Is this Tom?
This is Tom.
Hey, Tom. So
I was just noticing that, you know, everybody has a lot of different stories. I actually have had Medicare for almost 10 years, and I'm rather happy with it. But I have Medicare and not Medicare Advantage.
Right. You've got the traditional yes. Medicare. So do you also pay for Part G and Part D and whatever else? What other?
I pay for the supplemental plan and Part D.
Right.
Part of the supplemental plan comes from... Now, the thing about the supplemental plans is there are different plans
mm-hmm.
under the supplemental. I've got Plan F, which is the best coverage, although it's probably more expensive.
Okay.
I pay $238 a month.
Okay.
To, and I'm gagging when I say this, United Healthcare.
Ugh. Right. So it's $238 a month for the supplemental for the Part F alone?
Yeah.
And then what do you pay for D?
$70 a month for the drug coverage.
Okay, so we're already at $308.
$310 a month or something like that.
Wow.
But I had a head injury, a fall from a ladder. I got a helicopter ride to Stanford Medical Center. And therapy and all that. It didn't cost me a dime.
And that's the thing. Yeah. You know, look, Howie Klein, who's my regular Thursday guest, battled a very rare form of cancer. Like, I couldn't even tell you the name of it. It is a very rare form of cancer. He also has traditional Medicare. And he loves it. He couldn't be happier. And I'm sure he does the same thing as you do. He's got the traditional Medicare. He has a supplemental. It's probably F because he probably has the best one. And Part D. And everything is paid for. Everything is covered. Nothing is ever questioned. And it's never a fight with the insurance company.
I have stopped being totally polite to people who come after me trying to sell me a Medicare advantage. But
I hear you. Well, that's the way to go, and that's the difference. But and is there any charge? They still take. They got to take about $144 or something like that each month out of your Social Security check for the straight Medicare. So that's
right, they do that. I never see that. So
right.
It's not like
so
I'm,
you don't think I'm about it.
I never write a check, so it's a little less painful.
Right. But again, when you add that on top of it, you're now up at about $450 a month, which
right.
When you think of when I look back on what I was paying for health insurance before the Affordable Care Act, my premium alone was about $1,000 a month. I couldn't afford it.
Joy is not old enough for Medicare yet.
Right.
So she's on a regular insurance plan, and it's like $180 a month.
Right.
But boy, when something went wrong, we have a deductible of $6,000.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I got to tell you, and you still have, I think, 3 days. So listen up, everybody. If you're too young for Medicare and you have health insurance or you need health insurance, go to healthcare.gov. Unless you're in a state that has your own exchange, go to your own exchange. The COVID relief that Biden put in that they got passed soon after he got into office includes extra subsidies for Affordable Care Act plans. And mine, like $100 a month was knocked off of mine. I think I was paying like $285, and now it's something like $185. And Allison's went from $100 and something down to like $80 a month. So the savings are real. And again, you're still dealing with for-profit insurance companies, so it is that government-sanctioned extortion. But at least you're covered. At least my stuff is covered. You know.
Yeah. And there are various plans that offer you dental and hearing coverage and all that. They don't say what it's going to cost you.
Right.
And so avoid that. Really, we've got to push for the government to expand it, cover it, and make that Medicare for all.
Without a doubt. Hey, Tom, I'm going to bring in someone else. Someone who has been calling from the 520 area code. Who's this?
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Hi, my name's Emily.
Hi, Emily. Mm-hmm. Emily, where are you? Where's 520? Is that the Austin area?
Well, that's Arizona, but
Arizona.
I live in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, much nicer. That's funny. My David's son, it lives in Arizona and is visiting Portland right now. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Anyway. I'm on the Medicare and also Medigap. I have a Medigap policy.
Okay.
It's a high deductible policy, so I have to reach a certain point before it covers everything.
Right.
But my monthly premium is under $60 a month.
Under 60?
I also have yes, indeed. Yes.
And that's
but
for is that
a
part
high deductible. So,
part oh, it's a high deductible. Okay, on Medicare. See, that's what it's so complicated. They make it so complicated.
It's Medigap, and that's
right.
The difference between Medicare Advantage.
Yep.
There's straight Medicare, you know. Then there's Medigap, which pays what Medicare will not pay.
Right.
And but if you want prescription insurance, you do have to pay for Part D, which I do.
Uh-huh.
But I just switched over. I have a new policy this year. You can change every year if you need. It is a bit of extra work. A little bit of research, but my new monthly cost for D is $11 and change.
Wow. Wow. You got a great deal.
My previous company was, I was paying $14 and change a month.
Wow.
And it went up to $20 a month starting this year. So I switched over to this other company. And I do, that other guy was talking about mail order. I do mail order. They offer mail order pharmacy. They send you 90 days of pills at a time. I don't, here's the other thing, though, different from your situation. I have no major health problems.
Right.
I take blood, boring things, blood pressure, statins, you know, Fosamax, you know,
right.
I take nothing that's fancy or expensive.
Yeah, well, so you know what, but insulin shouldn't be expensive either, and we see what they're doing with the with the price of insulin.
That's a whole nother issue. Of course, I'm in favor of Medicare for everybody, and of course, absolutely. But I'm just telling you, this is my reality right now.
Gotcha.
Now, if you have an expensive medication, and it's a tier 4 or 5, mm-hmm. whatever, and there's no generic, you're going to have to pay whatever their cost is for that tier. Could be $30-$40 a month. I don't know. But the problem is that 1 year your company may cover it, and then the next year they may not.
That's right.
And you have to be vigilant. It's actually Part D in a way is more complicated than Medigap, because it changes so much from year to year. The Medigap policies are enforced by Social Security, by Medicare, actually. So like the high deductible plan that I have, there's a limit, and that is set by Medicare, not by my insurance company, mm-hmm. what it is. And it goes up a little bit every year, but it's still pretty reasonable. I have found this to be, when I turned 65, I went in into a senior, an agency, and they counseled seniors, and I got a lot of help from someone who's quite knowledgeable. Now, they didn't tell me, you know, where to go, what policy, you know, what company to go with, but they told me what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got, you know, if you've got a little bit of time on your hands and are willing to do the research, you can do all these things. And I have to say, this year when I switched over my Part D to a new company, I did. I spent a lot of time on the internet plugging in my prescriptions and what it was going to cost and the comparisons and so forth and so on. So for people that can't do their homework, this is impossible, really. You know, if you're getting elderly and you don't have your, you know, you're not compos mentis, then you're not going to do all this. But one of the things the guy told me when I was turning 65, he said, be very careful with your Part D. He said, because people sit on the same policy for year after year, and then things that were covered all of a sudden aren't covered, and you're going to end up paying a lot more. So there are inexpensive. Now, the other thing is rates change, vary depending on where, what part of the country you live.
Of course. Yep.
And, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And so, it also, I think there's also a kind of a sliding scale.
Ahead.
So if you made more money while you were working, then you're going to pay more money as you're older for Medicare. There's nothing uniform
that's
about
right.
it. There's nothing, right? It's not the same
right.
for any
that's
two
right.
people.
Well, even your income, if you exceed a certain amount, your minimum, you know, your monthly Social Security or your monthly Medicare cost is going to go up.
Yeah. Right.
And our monthly Medicare cost did go up this year.
Crazy.
I'm paying, like, I think $170 taken out of my Social Security.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay.
So, and, you know, I mean, I get Medicare Advantage. And one of the reasons I didn't go that way at the beginning is because I knew I was moving, and I wasn't sure where I would be living and how much of the year I would be spending. Maybe I was going to be living in more than one place. And so I didn't mess with Medicare Advantage. I just wanted to be able
well,
to
you
take
were smart.
My healthcare wherever I went. But
gotcha.
Actually, as it turns out, I'm here permanently. But I don't think I'm going to switch over as long as I can afford it.
No, and
but
you shouldn't. That's
I
the
know,
thing.
I, you know,
Medicare Advantage is not an advantage. This is the health insurance industry doing a private takeover of Medicare. And now it gets worse. Thank you for the call. I'm going to run because our guest is here and I've got to move on. But I really appreciate your call and your input. Thanks. Bye-bye.
No.
You know, the thing about... again, this slog towards privatizing Medicare, now they're doing this direct contracting thing where they don't even tell you, but you can be put. If your doctor is working with one of these direct contractors, they can, without your knowledge or permission, put you into that program, which is like Medicare Advantage, but I believe on steroids. It is the end result is to privatize Medicare, which is going in the wrong direction. You know, I didn't plan on the whole first half hour of the show being on this topic, but this is what happens when we start talking about it. I started telling you who today's guest was going to be, and his name is Donald Cohen. He is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit In the Public Interest. They're at inthepublicinterest.org. It's a policy center on privatization and responsible contracting. And he's also the co-author of the book, The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back. Donald, thank you so much for joining us today. You came in, you heard what happened. Again, I just was teasing that you were coming up and went into my regular spiel about, you know, Medicare Advantage, and the phones started ringing. This is what happens when we talk about this subject because it's so disturbing on so many levels. But welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. You know, I just became eligible for Medicare a few months back, and I'm actually struggling to understand a little bit the practical aspects of it as well. I did come to the caller's last point. I did actually come to the belief, because I'm still working, so my, you know, I pay, mm-hmm. right? My premium went up, and it's based on my family income. I kind of, after I thinking about it, that's progressive payment.
Yeah.
That's progressive, actually. I should pay more because I'm making more now. So.
Right. Well, that makes sense. But even in retirement, when you're not making money anymore, they base it on what you made when you were working. And again, I'm not there yet, thankfully. I've still got a few years, but I went through it with my husband a few years ago who... You know, and because I do this for a living, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Wendell Potter, but Wendell Potter was the, he used to work for Cigna as their communications guy. And he was put out there basically to smear Michael Moore when Sicko came out to make excuses for like his company who denied life-saving medication for this woman. I think her name was Natalie Sarkazian or something like that. And she died because they fought for so long. When they finally said, okay, we'll give her the drug, it was too late. And that and a number of other things. And Wendell Potter said, I can't do this anymore. And he became a whistleblower. To this day, the only insurance industry whistleblower who has spoken up. And so I thank him. So we've had many, many discussions about Medicare. And what I've learned from him and others is Medicare Advantage, which there's such a heavy push on, you can't avoid it if you watch television at all. This is how, you know, these companies get paid a certain amount for taking on patients as Medicare Advantage clients, and whatever they don't spend, well, that's just profit in their pockets. So it's up, it's their prerogative not to cover you. And the sicker you get, the worse it is for you. Apparently, it's not too bad if you're relatively healthy. But the challenge is, as you get older, you're going to get sicker, you're going to need them more. And they, these private insurance companies, who are administering these ostensibly Medicare programs for CMS, has the right. They can say, nope, we're not covering that. And Medicare doesn't. Medicare can't. That's right. The big difference.
You know, it illustrates a really fundamental and simple point about privatization of lots of things. If they're going to make profit and they're going to say they often say they're going to save money, you know, there's only one place for that to come from. Care.
Yes.
That's it.
Exactly.
There's another magic here.
You know, your book is The Privatization of Everything, but I always go back to healthcare because I find it obscene that the healthcare industry is a for-profit enterprise.
Right.
And there's
another piece to that. You know, it's also, you know, it should be a public good. We should have Medicare for all. We all agree with that. So it's a public good that we treat as a market good.
Hmm.
Right?
Right.
So, you know, mostly, you get it through your employer. You might have Medicaid if you're poor. You might have Medicare if you're old. But the rest, everybody else, you're in the market for buying health care.
That's right.
And markets do one thing. They sell stuff and they want to spend as little as possible to make as much as possible. It's not all illegitimate. That's what businesses do.
Right.
It's just, you know, but there's only so much to go around and there's no reason for us to be diverting all this, you know, all these resources to, you know, to shareholders.
None at all. And the thing is, you know, I think it's a general rule of thumb with business. the more you can make, the more you should make. I call the health insurance industry government-sanctioned extortion because you need it, right? If you don't have it, you're really screwed. If you pay them, though, you know, you look at their contracted rates, like what, when you get a bill from the insurance, a claim thing from the insurance company, it shows here's what you were charged, here's what this we allow, and here's what we paid, and they pay a fraction of the, but if you didn't have the insurance, you'd be responsible for the full cost. That's why it's extortion. That should not be.
I was in Toronto recently, and I had not been in Toronto. I had staying with friends because I had to go to a conference up in Niagara Falls. And I was asking my friends about the healthcare system. They didn't even understand my questions.
Right.
No, we don't pay. Do you have co-pays? No, we don't. We just go to the doctor.
Right.
We don't pay. So it's really fascinating.
So that's one area that is obviously a thing for me. It consumes a lot of my thinking time. But you have the book, The Privatization of Everything. And really, they are. It's a privatization of everything. There are certain parts of our world, let's call them the commons. It's what our tax dollars go to. It's the roads. It's the infrastructure, things like that. But more and more, these things are being privatized. You tell about the privatization of roads, toll yep. roads. This is happening more and more and more to where it really is. I mean, there's a point where there's got to be a line drawn somewhere, but it doesn't seem that there is one.
Well, it is really everything that we think around us. There's private involvement in it. Some of it's legit. You know, we have hire companies to build a road, but that's not what we're talking about here. Right. And so transportation, water,
education, higher
education, food safety, not food production, but food safety. Which is above responsibility.
Right. Should be the FDA, right? Should be the food inspector.
Yeah, right. Well, and there's FSIS is the agency that's supposed to inspect food, and they're privatizing pieces of that. And it's also the weather. It's weather service. It's right. also science.
Prisons.
Also prisons and immigrant detention center. So it's pretty much everything. And, you know, there's a couple of ways privatization happens, actually, in our view and how we describe it. One is we outsource something. We sell off a bridge, we sell off a water system or a prison or what have you, or the custodial services in a school, right? Mm-hmm. It's all the above. But it's also when there isn't the public money and the public resources and the public will to provide for a basic thing, essential service, then we are left to the market. Right. And so we define that, you know, which some would call austerity. Mm-hmm. We define the impacts of austerity as privatization. Childcare is a fully privatized public good. Everybody who has kids needs childcare.
That's right.
We need, I no longer have young kids.
Me either.
We need every kid, but I still need every kid to have childcare because that's what makes a good nation and a good economy. So it's really touches a lot of stuff. And I'll finish by saying, here's how we define privatization: private control over public goods. How they get control of our stuff.
Private control over public goods. You wrote, privatization is a transfer of control over public goods to private hands. So the fact that they're doing that, let's talk about education, because this is a perfect example. There is this push, the Republicans like to call it school choice. Well, it's not about choice. Really, it's about they want. Look, I live in Florida, or as I call it, Florida. We have a governor now who wants to. He's proposing legislation. I guess the session just started yesterday. He wants to give parents the ability to sue school districts if they don't like the curriculum that's being taught.
Right.
Now.
That's just racism. That's not privatization, so per se.
but it also goes under the guise of right. School choice, because he wants to be able to take public monies that go to fund the public school systems and put it into private schools, mostly parochial schools, religious schools, right?
That's right. Well, private schools and charters.
Charters.
So it's important to remember about school choice is that the origin of school choice was a segregationist response to Brown versus Board of Education.
Wow.
That when that happened, you know, in the South, white parents didn't want to send their school, you know, to school with black kids. And so the policy of choice for the legislature was to create school vouchers. so that you could take your public money and go and create white flight academies and segregation academies, and then other, and then the other schools close down. Mm-hmm. That's the history of choice. Now, it's not exactly the same now, but there are frightening similarities and echoes of that. One is there are now voucher initiatives, you know, initiatives to increase school vouchers all across, well, mostly in red states, but not exclusively. The growth of charter schools. I mean, there's good charters and bad charters. There's different kinds of debates about that. But the growth of charters is increasing the segregation of our schools.
Right. And there's also for-profit charters and not-for-profit. Yeah. And again, education should not be a profit-making enterprise. Just saying.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly. And well, and you know, a lot of states say they must be nonprofit charter schools, but then they hire for-profit companies to run them.
Right. So, and the salaries are not in line with what you would consider a nonprofit organization.
And the, you know, in Academica is a Florida-based charter chain that we've looked into, and you know, all sorts of really crazy land deals where they, you know, they have a school, it's technically nonprofit, but they rent the school from a related party for-profit at higher lease rates. So there's all sorts of ways to extract resources that that happen.
Yes.
That happens all the time.
So there's education. Another thing is water. Now, did the Flint water disaster deal come out of a privatization thing, or was that just a cost-cutting thing on the behalf of the government of Flint, who wanted to get cheaper water?
It's a it's a result of a couple of things. Austerity, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so, you know, the water systems around the country are in need of major investment, right? Yes. So no question. And, you know, the infrastructure bill is going to help with that in terms of lead around the country. I don't remember exact numbers. So you have, and part of the reason for austerity is tax cutting, mm-hmm. but part of the reason is how we pay for our water. So Flint, you know, water systems are expensive. Mm-hmm. There's no way that we pay primarily for water in this country as a commodity, for the gallons we use and all that, with some grants and things like that. The people of Flint cannot solve their water crisis if the only way to get the money is from their fares, from the fees of the water.
Right.
It's not possible. So what you have to do, so we have, you know, we've put them in a corner, you know, we put everybody in a corner, solve your own problem. You don't have the resources to do it. Look at what happens, right? So it, for the most part, it was the emergency manager system that allowed someone to come in and say, this is what's going to happen. They mm-hmm. changed the source of water to the Flint River. There was a private company involved, Veolia, but as a Veolia as a consultant to help come up with those ideas, but it wasn't under their control.
Okay.
The horrifyingly and fascinating thing about the Flint situation is, you know, you're probably aware, there was a legal settlement, I think it was last year. People of Flint, I can't remember exactly the plaintiff class was, settled with the state of Michigan for $600 million. Okay. So there's two. Okay. Because, you know, the kids got poisoned, right? Okay. Think about that. First off, where do they get that money? They have to borrow it. So the bondholders make money off of that. Second is, think about had we spent that money beforehand.
Yeah. Right.
Right. What would have the impact on our lives, the impact on the
totally
lives
different.
Of the kids there and the families there. So it's, you know, we think we're going to get things for cheap. We pay in the end.
Of course,
and
we always pay more
and we pay worse.
You know, there's a thing here in Florida. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the state of Florida has beautiful, used to be pristine springs. Artesian springs, they call them. In fact, there's water, bottled water, that comes from these springs, mostly from the Nestle company. Well, Nestle pays the state of Florida nothing. Close to nothing. Seven Springs pays a one-time $115 permit fee to the state of Florida to allow for Nestle's pumping. So Nestle pays Seven Springs millions of dollars a year, but the state of Florida gets a $115 permit fee one time for unlimited pumping. Well, these pristine, gorgeous, clean water, freshwater springs, the flow is hurt at all of them. It is screwing up the whole ecology of the state of Florida. Nestle's is a multi-billion dollar company, and Florida, we have no say in it. This is taking our public resources, completely privatizing. I guess the owner of the land is somehow making this kind of stuff should not be allowed to happen, but it's happening everywhere and we're destroying the planet and everything else along with it. That's what this book is about. Yes.
That's right. Well, we didn't talk. I didn't know that about Florida. Michigan has the same situation. I think California, a number of states do. You know, I mean, obviously, you sort of implied it. And then we end up with plastic bottles,
everywhere, right?
So, you know, the CEO of NASA, I can't remember his name, you know, was quoted famously as saying he does not believe water is a human right. Right.
Oh, God.
Now, part of what he was saying is we need to pay for it. Right. Which, of course, we do. We need to pay for everything. OK. But he was also saying, you know, it's a market good. You know, we should be able to make money off of it. You should have to buy it, which is, you know, there's nothing, you know, the water in our, you know, the water that comes from the ground, you know, I don't think anyone should own that. Do you?
No.
I
mean, it's ours. Bottle it and sell it back to us. I find that the most distasteful thing ever. And most people don't know it. But read about Nestle and the Florida spring water. It will sicken you. So, Donald Cohen, you write about all of this, the privatization of everything. You run an organization called In the Public Interest. Tell us a little bit about what you do there.
Yeah, so we're a research and policy and strategy center around public goods, around stopping private control over public goods, getting public control over it, helping folks figure out ways to create new public revenues to do public things. We do research, we do policy work, we do, we write a lot of op-eds and things like that. And we work with folks around the country, actually helping them understand their, you know, what's going on in their community, how to wage campaigns against, you know, bad things, how to make good things happen. Mm-hmm. You know, we do need to rebuild our infrastructure, but you can do it right and you can do it wrong. We're doing some work in Miami-Dade with the mayor of Miami-Dade right now. And I'll actually be in Miami at the end of February, if, you know, COVID permitting.
Hopefully, right.
With a talk with her. So that's what we do. We help folks understand what's going on around us and we help them, you know, win things.
You know, and Florida right now is sort of ground zero for the crazy in this country. We have a governor who's nuts, who I told you wants to, you know, to pass a law so that parents can sue school districts because they don't like the curriculum. If there's even a hint that they're teaching any elements of critical race theory. The whole thing is just so absurd.
Which, of course, is nuts. I mean, it tells you what, because no one is teaching critical race theory. It's a legal theory, but that's not the point. The point is, this is the racist. It's not even a dog whistle. It's a bullhorn.
It is.
Right. And it's firing up, the crazy both combination of racist base and Trump base, you know, giving them something to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're going along with it. It is quite disgusting.
Right. So the whole, the private, they keep talking about mostly Republicans, but many Democrats as well. I'm not going to absolve them of any of this blame. They are market driven. They're a capitalist society. Well, where is the line? Shouldn't there be a line between what make up the commons? What our tax dollars go to fund. That's why those of us who pay taxes, knowing that it's our contribution to our society, to the commons, we pay so we can live in a nice place and drive on good roads and have police services. Couldn't some things be put off limits? I mean, because it seems like everything's being privatized.
Here's how we think about it, a little bit broader. So first off, what's the commons, or we call them public goods, right?
Referred
to all over. So what are those things? It's not everything, but we define it as the things that we all need to survive and thrive. And number one, number two is that we need everyone to have so mm-hmm. that we can all survive and thrive, and that we can only do if we do it together. Right. You can't get everyone health care in this country at the same cost unless there's government involvement.
Right.
I mean, there's private involvement. There's some private doctors and all that, but you can't do it. You can't send us a letter to every corner of the country at the same cost without government involvement. Right. So the big things, health, education, you know, clean air and clean water, knowledge, the environment. Transportation, mobility. These are things, you know, that we've got to do together, right? So what the line is, isn't as much as, Chai says, simply, who's doing the work? Is it who's in charge of the work?
Sure.
Right. So we contract for all sorts of things, right? everybody contracts for things and governments will contract for things, right? The question is who sets the standards? Who makes sure that this, who creates the rules and the regulations? Who provide, who makes sure those rules and regulations are being, enforced and implemented, right? We don't make, like I mentioned earlier, we don't grow food as a, the food is a private commodity. Mm-hmm. Food safety is a public good.
Right.
Right. So what's happening there in food safety? Just as an example, two things. One is the FSIS, that's the agency within FDA that is the inspection service, okay. Right? They've been cut. So they don't have the resources. So private company production, chicken and peanuts and all these things, and, factory farming happens. The companies want to have a clean bill of health or some sort of stamp, so they hire their own auditor. Mm-hmm. When you hire the auditor, the auditor works for you and doesn't, wants to give you a clean bill of health because they want you to hire him again.
Right.
So that's, that we're just sort of leaving that to the market and to, the fox guarding the hen house. But we also have some new programs. FDA has some new programs that allows companies to self-inspect. And contract that out in a way.
Wow.
So the line though is the control.
Okay. Well, then along those lines, in our last minute or two, we've got the second part of the title of the book is how we can fight back. How do we fight back? What can we do watching everything around us being put into private hands of people who are not in it for the public good? They're in it for their, to enrich their bank account.
Well, first thing to remember in a minute is that they played the long game. Mm-hmm. There was an assault on government. There was they played the long game. So we need to do the same thing. It's not like we will find one message or one thing. So having said that, a few things. First, we need to try to recognize the public all around us and the difference between the public and private and the public purpose, right? Mm-hmm. The roads are about mobility. We all need it. So it's there's sort of a mind shift there that we are citizens, not consumers of public goods. We are citizens that are interdependent and have responsibility to all. That's really important. The second thing is when you hear the tropes, business efficient, government inefficient, the private, the profit motive is the way to make things happen. The market's the way to make things happen. You have to interrogate those things. Efficiency, when they mean it means spending less. What are you going to spend less on? Healthcare, wages, all sorts of stuff. And then the final thing is, when you're engaged in governing, everybody should be part of groups and things, is ask the hard questions, right?
Yes.
Ask, okay, who delivers my water? Who's in control of it? Who gets to set the rates? How do we make sure it's clean? Who's overseeing it so that it's, that it's clean and healthy, the water sources and all that. So those are things there are things in that level that we can all do all the time. Last thing I'll say, if I have it, is it is important for us progressives to lift up the positive things that public agencies do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that as often as I think we should, because you have the right wing attacking government all the time.
Always.
Progressives saying what government doesn't do well enough because we're always trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
So, and then the result of that is the American people are, have this belief that government's no good, can't do anything.
Well, over and over again, that's what we're hearing. And, I hate to say it, but some of the people we elect reinforce that notion. We need to, I'll use Joe Manchin's words. I rarely ever quote him. certainly not in agreement, but he said we need to elect more liberals, more progressives. We absolutely do. Yes, we want to get this stuff done. We want voting rights. We want the public goods to remain public goods. They used to be the public airwaves. They still are. And I know that the signals are owned by individual companies, but actually, they're not. The signals are owned by us. The licenses are owned by individual companies. We need to take back control of those things. They used to be the public airwaves when I started in radio 40 years ago. On the internet because the public airwaves have been appropriated by for-profit corporations. And they're all right-wingers.
I'll say two things. The public needs to control those things, but the right people need to control the institutions of the public.
Absolutely. So in that sense, it is up to us. We have to vote. I know, look, when you're disgusted and you think the government is, the people we elected aren't doing the jobs we elected them to do, well, I hate to say it, but you gotta elect more progressives. Get people in there who will do what is necessary. That's our job. Yeah?
That's right.
Donald Cohen, the book is The Privatization of Everything, How the Plunder of Public Goods Transformed America and How We Can Fight Back. And check out inthepublicinterest.org. Inthepublicinterest.org is the name of the organization. That's the website. Donald, thank you so much. What a great discussion. I really appreciate all the information, and it's something that we all need to think about.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Really appreciate it. All right. Take care. With that, we're done. Another show come to an end. I will leave you, as usual, with the news. Tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. And maybe in the first half, I'll get to some of the stuff that I had lined up to talk to you about in the first half hour that we never got to because we were talking about the government-sanctioned extortion known as for-profit health insurance. All right. I guess the line I will sign off with today, I've decided I'm going to give you a song lyric every day. Today it'll be a line from Howard Jones, and he sings, "Things can only get better." I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden on Tuesday traveled to Atlanta to deliver a rousing speech calling on lawmakers to pass voting rights and election reform bills to counter new voting restrictions in some Republican-led states. In a major change in his position, Biden urged lawmakers to alter Senate rules if necessary to prevent Republicans from blocking the legislation with a filibuster.
I've been having these quiet conversations with the members of Congress for the last 2 months. I'm tired of being quiet. Not a single Republican has displayed the courage to stand up to a defeated president to protect America's right to vote. Not one. Not one. Today, I'm making it clear, to protect our democracy, I support changing the Senate rules, whichever way they need to be changed to prevent a minority of senators from blocking action on voting rights.
Biden said that passing the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act would restore the strength of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the one President Johnson signed after John Lewis was beaten and nearly killed on Bloody Sunday. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell accused Biden of invoking, quote, the brutal racial hatred of Jim Crow segregation to smear the new state voting laws. Republicans are accusing Democrats of trying to pass federal voting laws to gain unfair advantages. Ay, ay, ay. Better late than never, I suppose. The Justice Department announced Tuesday that it's creating a domestic terrorism unit to counter rising threats from U.S.-based extremists. The head of the Justice Department's National Security Division, Matthew Olson, on Tuesday told members of the Senate Judiciary Committee that the new unit would, quote, augment our existing approach, which has assigned counterterrorism attorneys to work on domestic and international cases. The news came just days after the first anniversary of the January 6th attack on the Capitol, which some lawmakers have pointed to as proof that the FBI has failed to do enough to address domestic terrorists and violent far-right groups. More subpoenas from the House Select Committee investigating the uprising at the Capitol. This time, they sent out subpoenas for records and testimony from Andy Sarabian and Arthur Schwartz. Those are strategists who advised Donald Trump Jr. And also Ross Worthington, a former White House official, believed to have helped draft the former guy's speech at the rally before the insurrection. Congressman Benny Thompson, the panel's chair, saying, quote, "We have reason to believe the individuals we've subpoenaed today have relevant information, and we expect them to join the more than 340 individuals who have spoken with the select committee as we push ahead to investigate this attack on our democracy and ensure nothing like this ever happens again." Moving on to COVID, the CDC is now considering changing its guidance on masks and urging people to wear the N95 or KN95 face coverings that health workers wear. The move would be part of an effort to increase protection for Americans as the Omicron variant spreads quickly across the country, driving a record wave of infections and raising daily hospitalizations and deaths. A CDC official saying that we know these masks provide better filtration. The initial mask guidance from the CDC did not recommend the N95s or KN95s because of a fear of shortages at hospitals and other medical facilities. Those shortages don't exist anymore, and now they're suggesting people better protect themselves and others with more effective masks. The Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee on Tuesday held another contentious hearing on the pandemic and efforts to identify new variants. Dr. Fauci, the president's top medical advisor, once again defended the Biden administration's response to the pandemic as scrutiny grows over a spike in hospitalizations, testing challenges, and frustration over messaging. Fauci again clashed with Senator Rand Paul, this time accusing the Kentucky Republican of spreading misinformation about the pandemic and distorting the truth about COVID-19, quote, for political reasons, including fundraising. Fauci said, it distracts from what we're all trying to do here today, which is get our arms around the epidemic and the pandemic that we're dealing with, not something imaginary. Paul's website accuses Fauci of, quote, lying about everything from masks to the contagiousness of the virus. Paul said Fauci was trying to smear anyone who disagreed with him. Oh, please. At one point during the hearing, after a particularly erroneous and accusatory line of questioning from Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, Dr. Fauci was picked up by a hot mic off camera, muttering,
"What a moron."
Jesus Christ.
Marshall had demanded that Fauci provide disclosure on his investments, and Fauci pointed out that the information is already public.
Senator Marshall,
totally incorrect.
Senator Well, we look forward to reviewing it.
Senator Marshall, Dr. Fauci has answered you. It is public information, and he's happy to give it to you if you would ask. Senator Moran.
Just amazing. And the newest member of Congress was elected Tuesday in a special election in Florida to fill the seat that was held by the late Alcee Hastings, Florida's 20th congressional district. Welcome, Sheila Cherfillis McCormick. She's a first-time office holder. Cherfillis McCormick ran as a supporter of Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, a $20 an hour minimum wage, and $1,000 permanent recovery checks for adults making less than $75,000 per year. The newest member of Congress will be seated as soon as the results are certified. When she takes office, Democrats will hold 10 more seats than Republicans. There's still one vacancy in the House, with an April primary set in Central California to replace former Congressman Devin Nunes, who resigned to run Donald Trump's new social media company. All righty then. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.